हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Okay, page 41, chapter 4, devotional service surpasses all liberation. Verse 1 to 41. In the 11th canto, the Lord speaks, because my devotees possess saintly behavior and deep intelligence, they completely dedicate themselves to me and do not desire anything besides me. Indeed, even if I offer them liberation from birth and death, they do not accept it. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:20-34. 1-42. Also in the 11th canto it is said, the devotee who has offered his soul to me does not want anything if it is separate from me, not the position of the supreme demigod of the universe, Brahma, nor that of Lord Indra, nor kingship over the entire earth or over the lower planetary systems, nor the mystic perfections of yoga, nor even freedom from the cycle of rebirth. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:14-14. Jiva Goswami's commentary. In this statement, the order of the first four items is progressively lower in value. Then, when these are not accepted, what can be said of yoga siddhis and liberation? These are even more detestable. The devotee does not want anything at all arising from the achievement of those goals. He desires only me, the goal of his sadhana. I am greater than any other goals of human endeavor. He has offered his soul to me, my arpitatma. Yes, because the liberation, you can't do any service, and the yoga perfections, generally you're going to get very distracted by them. You know, I mean, how do you use becoming smaller than the smallest or bigger than the biggest in Krishna's service, right? Hanuman is able to use it, but otherwise, in general, it's not going to, you know, unless your ideas, you know, how you say the seats on the airplane are a little too small these days, so then you go in as a midget or something, yeah, like that. Yeah, just go in your luggage, right?
So Maharaj, actually all verses of Bhagavatam are speaking about pure devotion.
That's all they're speaking about. They are never speaking about anything else. That's what Bhagavatam is so unique. While you see in the Mahabharata, even though it's the essence of all the Vedas, it's talking so much on the secondary aspect. There's discussion of the Lord, his position, the devotees, their interaction, the devotion. But those stories about the Pandavas are only 25% of the verses. And then, being 25% of the verses, not all those are, you know, and a lot of that's on the aspects of their, you know, the politics, the fighting, you know, the situations they're in, you know, that kind of stuff. Big, big descriptions. And so, and backstories and all these. So even if it's about the Pandavas, you don't get, it's not all dealing with this. Mm-hmm. So then the problem is people will catch that and appreciate it. Like to this day, Mahabharata is appreciated. Mm-hmm. But then the difficulty comes is that they're not going to catch actually what they're supposed to do. So that's the whole idea of the Bhagavatam, is that every verse, every syllable is about Krishna and pure devotional service. So we see as you go through, and when they put it into the Bhagavatam verses into a systematic study, then you see that's all it's talking about. Because even we'll get lost in the story, and oh, here's more prayers, you know, here's more instructions and that, you know, we want to get into the story again, you know. But here you see is that this is all that is, and these are all from all different places, 11th canto, 1st canto, 3rd canto, 6th canto, 9th canto, like that. So it's very, very standard.
So from one verse, one advanced devotee acharya, he can explain all the philosophy with one verse.
Yes, because it's all Krishna. So wherever you start in Krishna, then everything else works. Right? Because if you start with Krishna, then there's his activities of Paramatma Brahman. If you start with Paramatma, then the point is why is he doing that? Because of Krishna's Bhagavan and and Brahman. If you start with Brahman, then there's no just where's that company? So you always have, and you're always going to have the living entities. You're always going to have the material energy.
Yes.
So. Yes, he can explain it and everything. But it's just like, let's say you have somebody who's an entrepreneur, right? So he can turn everything into economics.
Yes.
Doesn't matter what you're talking about, you know, either the money of it, how much it costs, what's the benefit from it, the social status is there, this and that, how to make the money, what was the better way to spend the money, or what was the better way to make the money, or how much more money you could have made from that kind of thing.
Yes.
You know, so they can do that, you know.
A, B, C, always be closing.
Always be closing.
The deal.
Oh, okay. So not American-born, confused.
Yeah, add a D to that.
Oh, then you have to add the D.
The
okay. Yeah, so it's just, they just, whatever it is, politicians can turn everything into politics, the artists can make everything into art. You know, so in the same way, the devotees, they just, it's all about Krishna. Because that's the thing, Krishna is all those things.
Yes.
So then that's just what you're trying to do. In devotional service, you're just trying to make it always about Krishna. So, yeah. Okay, he has offered his soul to me, my Arpitatma. 1.2.43. In the 12th canto, Shiva speaks, surely this saintly Brahmana does not desire any benediction, not even liberation itself. For he has attained pure devotional service unto the inexhaustible personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.10.6. Srila Prabhupada. 12th canto. Yeah, so you can see is that all these different places, all the different cantos, all the different prayers, whoever it is, then this is what is being talked about.
Right?
Srila Prabhupada. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 20th chapter, verse 34, our Lord Krishna says to Uddhava, my dear Uddhava, the devotees who have completely taken shelter of my service are so steadfast in devotional service that they have no other desire. Even if they are offered the four kinds of spiritual opulences, they will refuse to accept them. So what to speak of their desiring anything within the material world? Similarly, Lord Krishna says in another passage of the Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 14th chapter, verse 14, my dear Uddhava, a person whose consciousness is completely absorbed in my thought and activities does not aspire even to occupy the post of Brahma, or the post of Indra, or the post of lordship over the planets, or the eight kinds of mystic perfections, or even liberation itself. In the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th chapter, verse 6, Lord Shiva says to Devi, my dear Devi, this great Brahmana, sage Markandeya, has attained unflinching faith and devotion unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As such, he does not aspire after any benedictions, including liberation from the material world. Because the point is if you can remember Krishna, and you're fixed in Krishna, nothing can distract you from that. We get distracted because of our attachments. And that distracts us. So therefore, things don't go nicely in the material world, and because they don't go nicely because we're attached. And because we're attached and it's not going nicely, we suffer. And then when we suffer, we're not thinking of Krishna. Right? So then, but for the pure devotees, they don't have any material desires. So therefore, even if it means as the material world, is constantly varying, nicer, not nicer, this and that, but because you have no attachment, it doesn't bother you. You know what I'm saying? Let's say, there's something goes wrong, and let's say, you're walking down the street, and there's a garbage can that's fallen over, on the street there, and down at the shops and stuff like that. You just walk around it; it doesn't bother you. So even though it's an inconvenience and it's not a nice thing, it doesn't have any emotional effect on you at all. And now the shop owner, now, you know, he comes out and yeah, these crazy dogs and this and that, yelling and screaming and freaking out and everything, and he has to pick it up, and he's, you know, it has an effect because he's attached to some material situation. And because of that, then he gets affected. Well, the devotee doesn't. So the only reason we want to get out of the material world is because we're being affected by our own attachments. But if you don't have attachments, then you're serving Krishna, then you're with Krishna. You're in his, it's his place. The material belongs to Krishna. So then you're not going to have any difficulties. Does that make sense? Yeah. So
the difficulty is to maintain material attachments.
The difficulty is maintaining material attachments. Yeah, that's why it's considered one of the things that you should be careful of. Maintaining material attachment, even after hearing so much about it. Right? So maintaining then is that it's all right. You have them, but you're not, it's not, you don't really notice, then it's not going to be an effect. But you notice it and you're not willing to get rid of it or not willing to acknowledge that they're not good, that's where then the problem comes. If you see that you have, you're attached, you have to work in those areas, but you understand that it's not ideal, you know, either that area is not so important, but because of attachment you're involved, or it may be a standard activity and all that, but you're attached. So, but you know that that attachment's not good, but you continue in the service and do everything nicely. Then gradually, because it's, because you're not attached to the idea of being attached to it, you're not identifying with it, but you're using it, then by that service, then the heart will get purified, it will go away. Right? But if you're identifying with it and maintaining it, then the difficulty comes is then it won't go away. In fact, it might grow. Yeah. Does that make sense? Because if you're cultivating even the generic thing of material attachment, it's a package. Now, you may have 1,000 desires in that package. And so, therefore, there's no real focus. And as you do devotional service, and that ones that aren't really that important go away. Right? So, let's say 90 of them go away. But because there's still the desire for material things, those 10 now will take up the space of that 100 or 1,000. But if you're cultivating that, one shouldn't be attached in principle. Then, and accept that, even though one can't function on that, then gradually the heart becomes purified where it gets less and less. So then if there's only 10, it's very minimal. So it all has to do with the desire, you know, the living entity. What's their intent? How are they willing to? There's a lot of times you think, I'm attached to this, therefore I have to maintain it to function in that. But one doesn't. Devotional service means you perform those activities of attachment in connection with Krishna. So that means you have to educate yourself about that or associate with those who know or these kinds of activities. And so then it becomes... Then you're engaging it in Krishna's service, so it's getting purified. Right? You're performing those activities, so you'll get the results of those activities. But because you're doing it in connection with Krishna, one's developing more attraction for Krishna, so naturally that means it's reducing the material desire. So the idea is not just reduce material, that you don't want any of these things, okay. It's because they are so absorbed in Krishna, that's why they don't want. You know what I'm saying? Let's say you're sitting there eating something, your favorite food. Now, if I come along with something that's not your favorite food, are you interested? No. So that's another thing. But the point is devotees are always absorbed in Krishna, so then that it's self-sustaining. Right? Right? But you understand the point is that it's not that that they're sitting there and renouncing the food. They're just absorbed in something else. They don't care. Does that make sense? So that's the point. They're absorbed in the nectar of service to Krishna, so they don't actually care about anything. So Krishna says, even if he offers it, then they don't know. They just want to do the service. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say now. Let us say, there's someone you appreciate. Okay? So, you know, that's living today, now. Right? So, are you on the same planet as them? How's the interaction going?
Can be personal.
No, but I'm just saying, how's it going? Right now? You're not
okay.
Associating, they're on the other side of the planet, or you don't even know where they are. You know what I'm saying? So the point is, being on the same planet, what's the point?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? For the devotee.
Yes.
It's the service to Krishna that's important. Okay, let's say you have the same opulence as Krishna. What's the point of that? You have someone, okay, but it's service to Krishna.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? Or you have the same form as Krishna, but if you're not serving Krishna, what's the point?
Yes.
Or if you're an associate of Krishna, but not serving, then what's the point? You know, Kamsa also associated with Krishna. Is that what I'm saying? You know, so that's the point, is that these are secondary situations. They're all situations, but if those situations aren't connected to the Lord, what they don't care about it. So for them, they're not interested in liberation, because it's not about the situation, it's about the service to Krishna. So if they can be serving Krishna and have those, then that's fine. It's not that they're interested in them. It's just that they can be on the same planet and serve Krishna, then that's fine. But just being on the same planet, it's like, who cares? Right. So that's the whole. One, yes.
Maharaj, so is this an anartha that the devotees are cultivating, that all of this thing that we are doing here now, we will get that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, that the going back to Godhead and all the nice facilities and this?
Well, if it's about the facilities and that, if it's going back to Godhead,
peace,
means you'll be with Krishna and can serve Krishna and all that.
Second.
But if it's about, yeah, no problems, no this, no that, then, yeah, because where's Krishna in that?
In the background.
Yeah, and then that's where we started. That's how we got here. Was we're in that situation, and Krishna's in the background. So therefore, what's in the foreground? The foreground's going to be those facilities, and so then you end up here. Does that make sense? You know, let's say someone's a cowherd boy. And if all he's worried about is his family and that, and going out taking care of the cows so that, you know, they get plenty of milk so they can sell and they can get more stuff for the house and take care of the family nicely, then why do they need to be in the spiritual world to do that? They can do that very nicely here. So then they end up here. Yeah. Does that make sense? So the yagyic Brahmins, they're only worried about their yagyas. Why do they need to be in Braj? They could be here. Right? In Braj, nobody cares. Here, there'll be big Brahmins. Right? You know, so that's the point. Is that therefore, then it's adjusted, and they're not here. They're not there. They're here. Does that make sense? But we see with them, they saw the mistake and everything like that, and how fortunate their wives are, and so like this, they'll be able to progress. But if that doesn't come up, that you don't get, because they got the association of pure devotees. That's why they had that understanding. Mm-hmm. But if you don't get the association of pure devotees, then you'll come here. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is these things are the best facility for devotional service, but that's not what, it's still, devotional service is not dependent upon those facilities. You know what I'm saying? Like someone's inspiration to cook is not dependent upon the quality of the kitchen, if they're a cook. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, you have someone who fancies themselves a cook. They're not really a cook, but they know a little bit, they like to dabble in it, and they got money. Right, so they go out and they do their research. They buy the best in everything. Right, the best stove, the best pan, the best this, and they can tell you a whole thing about each one of them. In fact, if you go in the kitchen to cook with them, you can't actually do any cooking because they're always talking about how fabulous everything in the kitchen is. Right? Okay. So now, let us say somehow or another they are out in the forest and camping, and cooking has to go on. Right? So that's going to either mean they're cooking out of a tin can or some funky frying pan that somebody brought that's, you know, aluminum and dented nicely and, you know, the dog chewed on it a bit because they left it out and didn't wash it and, you know, stuff like that. So now this guy will not want to cook. You know, forget it. You know, this is not cooking. Because cooking means his facility. There's someone who's actually a cook, then it's a challenge. What can you do out there? You know what I'm saying? It's just like, I remember the boys would be making pancakes, but, you know, being boys, they always forget to bring all the stuff. So there were no spatulas. So they had to work out how to cook the pancake and be able to flip it without spatulas. Right? So first of all, you can flip it. But the problem is it sticks because it's not, you know, they're not, they can't take their mom's best nonstick frying pan out there, right? You know, they got the one that's left out in the garage. So then when it's ready, you just take it and then whack it on a rock or whatever's there, you know, and that makes it loose and then you flip it. You know, so. That makes sense? So it's just, they'll work it out. So that's the point, is that it's independent. Bhakti is independent. It's not dependent on any situation. Right? So in other words, all these facilities are natural to bhakti. So it's bhakti is producing these things. It's arranging these things. And then, so for those who are absorbed in pure bhakti, then Yogamaya arranges. But when it's not favorable, the ideal, let's say Maharaj Yudhishthira, their devotion, their absorption in Krishna is the same, whether they're, you know, in the palace with so much politics, or they're in Indraprastha and they have their own place, or he's doing the Rajasuya sacrifice, he's the emperor of the world, or they're out in the forest. It's all the same to them. So that's the point, is that it's about Krishna. These other things come along with it. You know, it's just like, let us say, you're going out with some friends, and there's, you know, one of the friends that goes along with you. The other friends don't know him so well, but you do. And then you go to some place, and then they're just freaking out about the facilities or something. Wow, look at that. Ooh, check this out. Wow, check these plates. Look at this spook. Now, is he an embarrassment, or is he not an embarrassment to you and all your friends? He is. Right? So this is what we're working with. They're freaking out about the facilities of the spiritual world. It's kind of like everyone else says, yeah, so? Wow, Sarabi cows. And yeah, well, why there's another kind of cow? You know? Desire trees. Yeah, they're all desire trees. You know, so. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is it's about the facility, not the devotional element. Because it's the desire tree, but they're still only going to ask for fruit. Right? And some Sarabi cow, they're only going to get milk. Right? They're not going to ask it for the latest Xbox or something. Right? You know, it's just they're just going to be happy with the milk. Does that make sense? So it's understood as if that inspires them to be involved in devotional service, otherwise they wouldn't be, great, go for it. Because if they do devotional service, with time, Krishna will become more and more prominent, and they won't be interested. Just like Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted a kingdom bigger than Brahma's, right? It's not even going to fit in the universe, right? But from doing devotional service under the direction of the, you know, the Acharya, then he came to the platform where he wasn't interested. So that's the beauty of devotional service, that even if they are materialistically inclined, if they're in good association, the engaged in service, it'll still work. You know what I'm saying? On the material platform, anything's wrong, it just doesn't work. But the spiritual platform, it always works because it's transcendental. Does that make sense? So therefore, don't criticize. If in discussions and that people understand that there's something, a higher platform and all that, and they're willing to, you know, start to incorporate that into their practice, then that's good. But if they can't understand it all, then just talk on, you know, on some aspect that they're interested in. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, it's about, they'll be talking about engaging the secondary. You know, it's in Krishna's service, but it'll be more about the, you know, their interest in that secondary item. But because they're engaging in the Lord's service, it's perfect. Does that make sense? Okay. 1.2.44. In the Padma Puran, Kartik Mahatmya, it is said, O Lord, I do not accept liberation or anything leading up to liberation from the Lord, who awards benedictions. May your form as the young cowherd boy remain in my mind and nothing else. 1.2.45. Bound up by Mother Jashoda with the ropes of devotion, you freed the sons of Kuvera and bound them with bhakti. In the same way, please bestow on me prema bhakti, O Damodar. I do not accept liberation. Srila Prabhupada. Similarly, there is a statement in the Padma Purana describing the ritualistic function during the month of Kartik, October, November. During this month in Vrindavan, it is the regular principle to pray daily to Lord Krishna in his Damodar form. The Damodar form refers to Krishna in his childhood when he is tied up with rope by his mother, Jashoda. Dama means ropes and Udara means the abdomen. So Mother Jashoda, being very disturbed by naughty Krishna, bound him around the abdomen with a rope, and thus Krishna is named Damodara. During the month of Kartik, Damodara is prayed to as follows. My dear Lord, you are the Lord of all, the giver of all benedictions. There are many demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva who sometimes offer benedictions to their respective devotees. For example, Ravana was blessed with many benedictions by Lord Shiva, and Hiranyakashipu was blessed by Lord Brahma. But even Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma depend upon the benedictions of Lord Krishna, and therefore Krishna is addressed as the Lord of all benefactors. As such, Krishna can offer his devotees anything they want, but still the devotee's prayer continues. Quote, I do not ask you for liberation or any material facility up to the point of liberation. Because like liberation is the highest, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Yes. So not moksha, so but also no benedictions within dharma, artha, and kama, right? He's just not interested. What I want as your favor is that I may always think of your form in which I see you now as Damodara. You are so beautiful and attractive that my mind does not want anything besides this wonderful form. In this same prayer, there's another passage in which it is said, quote, My dear Lord Damodar, once when you were playing as a naughty boy in the house of Nanda Maharaj, you broke the box containing yogurt. And because of that, Mother Jashoda considered you an offender and tied you with rope to the household grinding mortar. At that time, you delivered two sons of Kuvera, Nalakuvara and Manigriva, who were staying there as two Arjuna trees in the yard of Nanda Maharaj. My only request is that by your merciful pastimes, you may similarly deliver me. Right? That we're standing in the courtyard as, you know, these trees, the big trees, you know, big powerful trees and all that. And that will be delivered from that kind of identity. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, otherwise they're very nicely rooted. Right? It means Arjuna, can sometimes see when you're driving to Krishnagar, if you're driving towards Krishnagar, then once you pass all kind of like the water, between that water and the bridge over the Jalungi, then there's a forest there. In there, there's a lot of Arjuna trees, and some of them you might see are a little bit bigger, but probably not much. But the thing about it is the trunk will be a certain size, let's say like one of these columns or that, a little bit bigger. But then they'll have these kind of like, I don't know what they're called technically, but they're like fins. They're like buttresses. that actually grow off the side. And there'll be quite a few, can be a meter or two high. And then from there, then they slope down to the ground out. So you have this one tree in the middle with all these buttresses all around it on all sides. That is a well-rooted tree. So if he had pushed over something else, then, you know, it's not a big deal. Right? You know, elephants go into the forest and push over whole trees. But I've never heard of an elephant pushing over an Arjuna tree. Right? So then baby Krishna, just pulling the mortar through, he pulls over two. And they had been there for a while. I think they were really, really old. So they weren't just, you know, new saplings or something. You know, Nandababa had planted them the day before, so he came through and he just kind of pulled them out of the dirt there. Yeah. No. So the point is being so rooted in material existence, the material concept, which they were, right, then Krishna, in his pastime of this, is so attractive that he can uproot that attraction. So that's the whole idea. You may my only request is that by your merciful pastimes, you may similarly deliver me. Right? Mm-hmm. The story behind this verse is that the two sons of Kuvera, the treasurer of the demigods, were puffed up on account of the opulence of their father. And so, once on a heavenly planet, they were enjoying themselves in a lake with some naked damsels of heaven. At that time, the great Saint Narad Muni was passing on the road and was sorry to see the behavior of the sons of Kuvera. Right? Because they're coming in the great father, but they're only interested in the facilities of the father. Not in the father is a responsible person, right? If you're the banker for the universe, you must be responsible, right? You know, bankers here, you know, good bankers, and they're always respected, right? So here you have the banker of the universe, right? So you expect his sons to be respectable, but they're not. So he's feeling sorry. Okay. Seeing Narada passing by, the damsels of heaven covered their bodies with cloth. But the two sons, being drunkards, did not have this decency. Narada became angry with their behavior and cursed them thus, "You have no sense, so it is better you become trees instead of the sons of Kuvera." Upon hearing this, the boys came to their senses and begged Narada to be pardoned for their offenses. Narada then said, "Yes, you shall become trees, Arjuna trees, and you will stand in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. But Krishna himself will appear in time as the foster son of Nanda, and he will deliver you." In other words, the curse of Narada was a benediction to the sons of Kuvera, because indirectly it was foretold that they would be able to receive the favor of Lord Krishna. After that, Kuvera's two sons stood as two big Arjuna trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj until Lord Damodar, in order to fulfill the desire of Narada, dragged the grinding mortar to which he was tied and struck the two trees, violently causing them to fall down. From out of these fallen trees came Nala Kuvara and Manigriva, who had by then become great devotees of the Lord. Mm-hmm. Right, so Krishna is doing the pastime to fulfill the desire of Narada. Yes. Right, and so because he had said it'll be like this, then that's the way it goes. Just like Brahma, he gave that benedictions to Hiranyakashipu. And so Krishna maintained that because his devotee had said, therefore then he followed that. You know, that. So for Krishna, it's not about just doing something. Being God is not a big deal, right? It's doing things in connection with the devotee. That's the special thing. 1:2:46-47. The Narayana Vyuha Stava in the Hayashirsha Pancharatra says, "O Lord, bestow of benedictions. I do not pray for dharma, kama, artha, or moksha. I desire only service at your lotus feet." Just thinking, dharma, kama, artha, right? So you do dharma, you know, and from that, then then you want to enjoy, and then you hope you have the facilities to pay for it. Rather than the normal, you have to do the dharma, from that you get artha, from that then you enjoy. So, yeah. So this is the, how do you say? This is the more contemporary approach. Like that. Yeah. And then when you don't have the money, then you want moksha, right? I desire only service at your lotus feet. I offer my respects to Prahlad, who asked only for devotion. He did not pray to Vishnu for liberation, though Vishnu wanted to give many benedictions. Jiva Goswami's commentary. The less immediate object of action, Vishnu, becomes the subject of yachita instead of mukti, as in the case of verbs starting with duhu, 16. Some verbs such as du, to milk, and prach, to request, can take two objects. Right? You have a thing in Sanskrit where you have double objects, you have double results, which you don't have generally in other languages like that. Vishnum na yachate varan. He does not ask Vishnu for a boon. In the passive for yach, the secondary object, Vishnu becomes the subject. Panini 1451. Verbs of similar meaning such as vri, to ask for, can also take two objects and should follow the same rule. However, in this case, the principal object, bhakti, becomes the subject counter to the rule. Right, so bhakti is the subject. That it's about bhakti. That they're talking to the Lord, so it's addressed to the Lord, but it's actually directed at bhakti is the subject, not the Lord. Yeah. Does that make sense? Means it's directed at two, but the primary one here is bhakti. Because of this bhakti, they don't want any of these things.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
So Maharaj, only pure devotee can act in such a way. And if a person can give another meaning?
Yes, that's the whole. That's why the acharyas, they go through and show the grammar. Like you see in Vishwanath's commentary, many of them, he's just going through it in an elaborated translation that has a purport included, but he puts the words in where they are so you understand what they mean.
Yes.
So Prabhupada, following that, that's how he translates. It already has that purport in it.
Yes.
You know? It's like he translated the Gita into Bengali, but not the purports. So the Bengali itself already contains the purports. So the Gita Gan has like 1,200 verses, though the Gita only has 700. Right? So there's more verses to explain everything that's there, but just in that simple Bengali poetry. You know, it's the same kind of poetry like in the songs of the Acharyas. And so then it explains everything. So we always see is that when you have the one, it's just directly the verse, but when Prabhupada's translating it in the purports, you see he's carrying also just the mood of it, what the main point that's there, all those different aspects. So they bring those out. So then if they're being technical, they bring it out with the grammar. But not knowing the grammar, we may not know so much about it, but if we're always exposed to that, with time we understand the principles. Right? Does that make sense? But generally when devotees will translate, they tend to leave out these. That's why it's rare that here you're getting actually just what's been written is what's been translated.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time they'll paraphrase it, because these kind of technical points you don't even have in English.
Yes.
So then it won't mean anything to anybody. You know, it's just like we say, an example of two results is that you win the battle, and by that you won the war.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two things: that you're going to win a battle and not win the war,
yes.
Or that you milk the cow, right? So you have milk, which is one result, and you got the milk out of the cow, because
yes.
Cows don't like when the milk sits inside. They want them; they need the milk to come out.
Yes.
So you relieve the cow of their distress of the full milk bag at the same time as you have milk now in the bucket.
Yes. Yes.
But we won't think like that in English. You got the milk. Who cares about the other aspects? Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, because in here when you're dealing with the Lord, then it's the Lord, the devotees, bhakti, something about the Lord, the glory of the Lord, and the Lord. You know, so you have all these things that you can do double things at once.
Another level of consciousness.
Yes. So that's why it is. They can see Krishna in everything, and at the same time see the person Krishna.
Yes. Yes.
Right. In other words, he's pervaded everything as Brahman and Paramatma. At the same time, as they can, that reminds them of Krishna.
Yes.
So they can see all that at once. Plus, they can see what we're looking at. Right? You know, we just see, you know, let's say the bricks. They see the bricks, and then they know why is that there? It's because of the strength. Krishna is the strength. Then he's, you know, so that's the Brahman level of it. But at the same time, as he's controlling everything and all that, is Paramatma. But it's Krishna. He's the one, and he's killing Agasura. So they see all that. We just see a bunch of bricks. Is that, yeah. On the other hand, in the second line, bhakti, the main object of action becomes the subject of vritaha, for emphasis. This is poetic license, to emphasize Vishnu and bhakti and denigrate mukti. So you just use it in the different ways depending on the endings. And then done at one is that it all does nicely in the poetics of the verse, but at the same time is also how it plays with the meaning. And this is Hayashirsha, so of all the Pancharatnas, 108, it's considered the oldest. So it's kind of the most formal. But, you know, see, this is what it's doing. So it has all these wonderful things within it, but then you have to be so trained and qualified to appreciate that. So the Acharyas bring that out, otherwise we would never catch that one. 1-48. I offer my respects to Hanuman, who did not want liberation, which Ram could easily give, but instead wanted servitude. Hanuman's statement, 1-249. Hanuman's statement is also famous. I do not desire liberation that cuts the bondage of material life, because in that state of liberation, awareness that you are the master and I am the servant disappears. In liberation, you're just situated in the spiritual platform. You're only aware of spirit. You're not aware of your position, the Lord's position. Therefore, there's no interest. Srila Prabhupada. There's a passage in the Hayashirsha Pancharatra, which states, "My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, I do not want any resultant benediction from my religious life, nor do I want any economic development, nor do I want to enjoy sense gratification, nor liberation. I simply pray to be an eternal servant at your lotus feet. Kindly oblige me and give me this benediction." In the same Hayashirsha Pancharatra, after Nrisimhadeva wanted to give benedictions to Prahlad Maharaj, Prahlad did not accept any material benediction and simply asked the favor of the Lord to remain his eternal devotee. In this connection, Prahlad Maharaj cited the example of Hanuman, the eternal servitor of Lord Ramachandra, who also set an example by never asking any material favor from the Lord. He always remained engaged in the Lord's service. That is the ideal character of Hanuman, for which he is still worshipped by all devotees. Prahlad Maharaj also offered his respectful obeisances unto Hanuman. There is a well-known verse spoken by Hanuman in which he says, "My dear Lord, if you like, you can give me salvation from this material existence, or the privilege of merging into your existence. But I do not wish any of these things. I do not want anything which diminishes my relationship with you as servant and master, even after liberation." Right? So it's he can do what he likes, but he's not interested, in anything that will just lessen his relationship of master and servant. Like that. So that's the point. Even he's liberated, if it lessens that, he's not interested. He just wants to be engaged in devotional service. Does that make sense?
This is the meaning when we chant Hare Krishna. We're asking for
service. Yes. Not a Mercedes Benz. Right? Yes. 1-50-51. In the Jitanta Stotra of the Narada Pancharatra, it is said, "I do not have the desire at all for Dharma, Artha, Kama, or Moksha. Please make my life completely dependent upon your lotus feet. I do not pray for liberation, Shalokya or Sorupya. O upholder of the earth, most distinguished Lord, true to your vows, I desire only your mercy." Srila Prabhupada. In a similar passage in the Narada Pancharatra, it is stated, "My dear Lord, I do not wish any perfectional stage by performing the ritualistic religious ceremonies, or by economic development, or by sense gratification or liberation. I simply pray that you grant me the favor of keeping me under your lotus feet. I do not wish any kind of liberation such as Salokya to reside on your planet, or Swarupya to have the same bodily features as you. I simply pray for your favor that I may be always engaged in your loving service. One, two, 52. In the sixth canto, it says, O great sage, among many millions, notice that devotional service surpasses all liberation, not just liberation, but all the different forms and that, and everything within the material world. So what's interesting is that it's quite a big chapter. Some of the other chapters are shorter, but that, so there's a lot of verses where devotees are making this point that they're not interested in anything material. O sage, among many millions who are liberated and perfect in knowledge of liberation, one may be a devotee of Lord Narayana or Krishna. Such a devotee who is fully peaceful is extremely rare. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.14.5. Srila Prabhupada. Similarly, in the 6th canto, 14th chapter, verse 5 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Pariksit inquires from Sukadeva Goswami, My dear Brahmana, I understand that the demon Vritrasura was a greatly sinful person, and that his mentality was completely absorbed in the modes of passion and ignorance. How did he develop to such a perfectional stage of devotional service to Narayana? I have heard that even great persons who have undergone severe austerities and who are liberated with full knowledge must strive to become devotees of the Lord. It is understood that such persons are very rare and almost never to be seen. So I am astonished that Vritrasura became such a devotee. In the above verse, the most important thing to be noted is that there may be many liberated persons who have merged into the existence of the impersonal Brahman. But a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, is very, very rare. Even out of millions of liberated persons, only one is fortunate enough to become a devotee. Right? Because you see, as Gopu Kumar, he's coming up through the universe, through the coverings. Right? And he comes out into the Mahakalapura, right? So, and he sees all these unlimited persons there absorbed in Brahman, right? In that great effulgence and everything like that. And then there's him. Does that make sense? There's one of him and tons of these liberated living entities. So it's rare, right? And Shiva and Parvati and all of his associates, then they're there, you know, doing theirs. When they see him, they do kirtan, they come over. Right? They're not coming over for all those guys absorbed in Brahman. They're just going on with their life. But when Gopu Kumar is there, then they come and then they're doing kirtan. So it's rare. Right? That's the specialty, is Lord Chaitanya's offering, is that you, so rare, one can take part. Jiva Goswami's commentary. Among the liberated Muktanam, who are still in their material bodies, but without bodily identification, and among those who have attained spiritual bodies, Siddhanam, in the spiritual world, Salokya, etc., even among 10 millions of such persons, a person who desires only service to Narayana is very rare. So even they're liberated here within this body, or even there in the spiritual world with the various aspects of liberation, so Salokya, Samipya, like this, it is rare out of ten millions of such persons, a person of desire only service is rare. Right? They're not interested in these things. That is rare. Yeah? 1253. So that's why you see Rupa Goswami is a verse. We can say, okay, we got it. We got, you know, but verse after verse to show from different angles so that we, you know, eventually we get the idea, right? Oh, okay, so we shouldn't want anything, right? We just want service to Krishna. Okay. 1253. In the first canto, Kunti prays, You yourself descend to propagate the transcendental service of devotional service under the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly? Right, so advanced transcendentalists who are, you know, situated, and mental speculators, you know, the jnanis who are purified. They can tell the difference between matter and spirit, so they're situated on that spiritual platform. Right? And then the transcendentalists who are beyond that. So he says, then how then can we women know you perfectly? Because they are able to tell the difference between matter and spirit.
Yes.
Right? So the women, by nature, they'll tell the difference between experiences. Mm-hmm. But whether it's spiritual and material, that's not defined. A good experience is a good experience. A bad one's a bad one. But whether they're distinguished, whether it's spiritual or material, that's generally not the... That would not be your natural, how you say, consideration. Right? So that's your point. So how can we know? They who are so intelligent, so analytical, right? Women don't want to be analytical unless there's some benefit for it. These guys can be so analytical. And so then how can we know you? Because they're, you know, having trouble knowing you. So how would we know? It's just, you know, this is the, in prayers, then this is called, what's it called? Danya Bodhika. Is taking that mood of humility. Right? Because here's a transcendental associate of the Lord, but they take that, you know, whatever it is. She'll say it's a woman, you know, or in Vrindavan they say, oh, we're just cowherds,
yes.
You know, or the cowherd, oh, we're just boys,
yes.
You know, like this, you know, or the Indian dwarf, oh, we're just kings, yes. You know, so it's a mood that's there. Does that make sense? So the mood's important. Srila Prabhupada. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 8th Chapter, verse 20, Queen Kunti is praying to Lord Krishna at the time of his departure. My dear Krishna, you are so great that you are inconceivable even to great stalwart scholars and paramahamsas, fully liberated souls. So if such great sages, who are transcendental to all their reactions in material existence, are unable to know you, then as far as we are concerned, belonging to the less intelligent woman class, how is it possible for us to know your glories? How can we understand you? In this verse, the particular thing to be noted is that the personality of Godhead is not understood by great liberated persons, but only by devotees such as Queen Kunti in her humbleness. Right? Means she's saying they can't understand, but she's talking to Krishna himself. Right? So it's just because of her humbleness, she understands. So it's not through anything else. It's not through great. It's not through being liberated. It's not through great intelligence and scholarship. It's through just surrendering to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right? As the verses before were discussing about prapatti, that surrender.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Although she was a woman and was considered less intelligent than a man, still she realized the glories of Krishna. That is the purport of this verse. Right? So even though mechanically, one will see that element of less intelligence, but the point is she's seeing Krishna, right? Not these great sages. They can discriminate between matter and spirit, but the thing is with the whether they'll choose Krishna or not, that's another thing. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. It's not about that kind of intelligence. It's devotional intelligence, right? Because here, when we say less intelligent, we mean the ability to tell the difference between matter and spirit. That's what we call intelligence in the Veda.
Mm-hmm.
Not mechanical intelligence. Does that make sense? You know, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about is how you use that intelligence to tell the difference between what's matter and spirit. Because as far as telling about what's a better situation within the material world, women are generally better at that than men. Right? And so, but as far as telling the difference between matter and what spirit, as we said, as long as it gives a good experience, that discrimination is not made. Does that make sense? So it becomes a difficulty. But if you want to surrender to Krishna, then everything's perfect. Jiva Goswami's commentary. All the verses since verse 23 have been proofs that those who desire the happiness of serving the Lord do not desire liberation. Now, starting with the present verse, the intention is to describe the efforts of such devotees to offer service to the Lord. How can we women understand Pashyema, you, omitted but understood, whose purpose is to teach bhakti yoga? Bhakti yoga, vidhan artam, to the Paramahamsas. Okay, means in other words, the word you wasn't used in the grammar, but because of the inference. You know, it's just like we say, is somebody going to do this? We didn't mention anything. We don't even tell like that. We just say somebody who's in the room, then they'll... I can see sometimes the laborers do that. Because there's a guy who's in charge, but at the same time, it's because they're villagers. They know each other, and no one really, you know, they're all villagers. They're all the same, right? But one guy's in charge, whatever it is, because that's how you hired them and all that. You know, he's able to organize and get you. So they'll all be sitting there chopping on the bamboo. And then something should be done. So the guy in charge will go, somebody needs to go get more bamboo. And then that's all he says. And just keeps cutting. And everybody else, no one says a thing. They all just keep chopping bamboo. And then after about 30 seconds, that seems to be the natural amount of time, then one guy says, I'm going. Then he'll chop for a little bit more, then he'll go. Because it's not that you told me to go get it. No, I decided I'm going. And then I'm going when I think I should go. So, but it works out. No? You seen that? Yeah, it's standard stuff.
Some preachers also apply this technique. They call it postmodern preaching. They give the audience all the options and let the audience choose whatever pure duties.
You can, but will they choose? Because this guy, if he doesn't go get it, then he won't be coming the next day. So there is some pressure to apply their intelligence here and, you know, make it practical. But yeah, you can try that. Give all the options and all that, and then. Is anyway, that's always like that. We're telling it is an individual thing, but it doesn't mean that we're not giving conclusions. That's the thing. We give conclusions. It's still up to them whether they're going to take it or not, whether they're going to accept it, whether they're going to use it. That's the choice. But the choice on what's the absolute truth or not, that generally we don't get involved in that game, right? Unless it's a direct thing that you're talking, and so then you might lead them through. But you know, it depends on the audience.
Very good point. Perfect point that you always make is that we are preaching, we are discussing pure devotion service. So no need to discuss mixed devotion service. Automatically, the audience is going to pick up wherever they are.
They're going to pick up. You don't have to discuss mixed. You discuss pure. It's just like if you set the bar at 100, then people will start, you know, wade in at 60. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You know, some will try, contemporary testing scheme, 30 is passed, so can I start at 30? You know, yeah. That's when then you talk about mixed devotional service, if it comes up. But otherwise, you just talk pure devotional service. Because otherwise, mixed devotional service isn't a goal. Pure devotional service is. So mixed devotional service, if it comes up, then it's a position, it's a method that you're using, but it has to still be about attaining pure devotion. Because otherwise, if it's just mixed devotion and I'm okay, then how far will the person get? Does that make sense? You know, that's always the thing, is that whatever you train at, then people will, when they are not in that situation, it'll generally be relaxed back from that. Does that make sense? You know, the boy is trained as a brahmachari, and he has, you know, basically no stuff except what he directly uses. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And he has to keep it all really nicely, you know, like that. And he does that for years and years and years, so he gets adjusted to that. Now when they go out of the school, then they'll accumulate stuff. right? Because they haven't had. But the volume of stuff will be way less than if they didn't have that training. So it's always going to be, you know, if they have two dhotis and that's all they have, then when they go out, then they'll have six or seven, you know, or ten, like that, you know what I'm saying? But if they never had that training, then they'll have 50, 60. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the difference. Because the main point is if he doesn't, if he's not comfortable with five or six, he won't be able to afford the amount of saris that are required. Right? But, yeah.
If he's not one, does he want sari?
No, according to Chanakya, it's one dhoti, nine saris. That's the proportion.
Huh? Eight sari worth more than ten dhoti.
That's another thing that you don't bring that up. First, is it means the volume is okay to talk about, not how much they cost. Like that. That's the whole point. Right. So that's the point. Okay, 1254. On this subject, Sutta also speaks. All different varieties of Atmaramas, those who take pleasure in Atma, or spirit self, especially those established on the path of self-realization, and those freed from all the rules and prohibitions of the scriptures, desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. Now, that's the uniqueness of the Bhagavatam. It's about pure, unalloyed devotional service. Right? Not just pure devotion. Because so here is what it means, pure devotion, because it says they don't want any of the kinds of liberation. That means it's pure, unalloyed devotional service. Because pure devotional service means you're comfortable with Vaishnava liberation. You know, Sayuja, no, but the Vaishnava liberation you're comfortable with. Because it's just focused on the Lord, connected to the Lord, that's pure devotion. You don't want anything for yourself. You just want that because it's connected to the Lord. But pure unalloyed. So the Bhagavatam is actually about pure unalloyed, about Braja Bhakti. Because point is, if you talk about Braja Bhakti, you will get those in all the other realms. Right? Let alone mixed devotional service, you'll get all the other realms. But otherwise, where are they talking about Braja Bhakti? Okay. Who are freed from all the rules and prohibitions of the scriptures, desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls. 1, 7, 10. Means he has to have those qualities. Otherwise, why would those who are Atmaramas become attracted? Right? They're transcendental, so only transcendental qualities will attract them. Srila Prabhupada. Another passage, which is very important, is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, 7th chapter, verse 10, and is called the Atmarama verse. In this Atmarama verse, it is stated that even those who are completely liberated from material contamination are attracted by the transcendental qualities of Lord Krishna. Jiva Goswami's commentary. Nirgrantha means those who are beyond the scriptures, consisting of rules and prohibitions. Means the purpose of those rules and prohibitions is get you to the transcendental platform. They're transcendental. So they're beyond the script, the rules. Beyond the scriptures consisting. It doesn't mean that they're beyond, let's say, bhakti. Right? Okay. 1255. Nirgrantha, yeah, means like, you know, Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, the yoga, all these things. So they're just absorbed in the scriptures based on pure devotion. 1255. Though the five types of mukti have been described as worthy of rejection, Salokya, Sharshti, Samipya, and Sarupya are not so contradictory to bhakti. Srila Prabhupada. From the above statement is found that a devotee is not after any of the stages of liberation. There are five stages of liberation, already explained as being, 1, to become one with the Lord, 2. To live on the same planet as the Lord. 3. To obtain the same bodily features as the Lord. 4. To have the same opulences as the Lord. And 5. To have constant association with the Lord. Out of these 5 liberated states, the one which is known as Sayuja, or to merge into the existence of the Lord, is the last to be accepted by a devotee. The other 4 liberations, although not desired by devotees, still are not against the devotional ideals. Some of the liberated persons who have achieved these 4 stages of liberation may also develop affection for Krishna and be promoted to the Goloka Vrindavan planet in the spiritual sky. In other words, those who are already promoted to the Vaikuntha planets and possess the 4 kinds of liberation may also sometimes develop affection for Krishna and become promoted to Krishna Loka. Jiva Goswami's commentary. Though these 4 are not extremely contradictory to bhakti, they are contrary to a small degree, since they are accomplished with some unfavorable attitude. Footnote 17. If a devotee has a desire for these 4, independent of the desire to please the Lord, then the bhakti is no longer anyavilashita shunya. The favorable portion in these four is caused by the acceptance of some bhakti. So it's favorable is because it's connection with bhakti. Right? The other aspects, as we mentioned, you can just have that position, but it doesn't mean that it has to be about the Lord. Right? So these things are being brought out not to put down others, but to show the glories of unalloyed devotion. That a living entity can have that kind of surrender to the Lord, that he's not interested in anything but the pleasure of the Lord.
Maharaj, in Vaikuntha, the devotees, they have this liberation.
Yes.
And they have, because they want, or because it's coming?
It can be either. So Vaikuntha can have that a wider range. Those who are interested in these liberate, but they're connected to the Lord, they can go there. And they may be those that aren't so interested, you know, like that. But it's there. You're engaging it. It's not that everyone in the spiritual world has these 4, right? To some degree or another. But the point is that it's not necessarily a prominent element. So for some it may be more prominent, and others it's less. Right. So as it goes up, it's less is more. Right. Is that what it says? But Braj means there's no interest at all. Okay. Then it's a matter of just majesty or sweetness.
The lesser prominent it is, the more dynamic the relation will be.
Yes. Because then it's just about Krishna. When it's more of just about Krishna, rather than his position or your position or facilities, then, you know, because you can work within that, and you're accepting he's God, you have these facilities, you're using them God's service. But it's not as much about you as a person and him as a person. So the less these are, then the more it's just about him as a person and you as a person, that interaction. Right? And then appreciating how he interacts with all the other devotees. One 256. There are 2 varieties of these 4 types of liberation. One predominated by the desire for happiness and power, and the other predominated by the desire for prema. The first variety is not accepted by those who are inclined to serve the Lord. Srila Prabhupada. So those who are in the 4 liberated states may still be going through different stages of existence. In the beginning, they may want the opulences of Krishna, but at the mature stage, the dormant love for Krishna exhibited in Vrindavan becomes prominent in their hearts. As such, the pure devotees never accept the liberation of Sayuja, to become one with the Supreme, though sometimes they may accept as favorable the other 4 liberated states, right? Because in Sayuja, there's no opportunity for serving the Lord. So that's just not accepted. And these others, they may be in those positions, and then with time, then they come to the position of not. You know, just like you have mixed devotional service, means pure devotion is mixed with the material. Then you have what they're discussing here is pure devotional service is mixed with the concept of transcendental liberation. So pure unalloyed means it doesn't have that either. Jiva Goswami's commentary. Here the author explains the word ati. In ati virujyate, of the previous verse, one variety has the predominant desire, uttara, for the happiness and powers, which are natural to the spiritual world. The other variety has the predominant desire for service, executed by one's natural prema. The devotees do not accept the first variety. This is understood in the previous verse quoted, Salokya Sharshi Samipya, Srimad Bhagavatam 3:29-13, quoted in verse 28. The four types of liberation are not accompanied by service, they are rejected. Right? So just those themselves, so like what we were saying before, is some may have that idea that this is what they want about the spiritual world. But as that said Srila Prabhupada, but at the mature stage the dormant love of Krishna exhibited in Vrindavan becomes prominent in their hearts. So as long as they keep that focus on Krishna, even though these other desires may be there, right, then but it'll still bring them to Krishna. Right? So at least there's something connected to Krishna. So someone it may be the various kinds of material facilities, and for others the various kinds of facilities of liberation. Yes.
So the initial state of the jiva, that is the stage, is also the first category?
Yeah, it means they have all the facilities and opulences and all that, but they're not interested to use it to Krishna. So it means if there's just even a glimmer of a chance, the idea to use it towards Krishna, then by the association of others there, then that will mature into prema. But because it's not, they're just comfortable with the opulences without Krishna, then they just naturally gravitate to the material sphere. Because that's what you're interested in. You know, it's just like if you're on this side of the river looking at that side of the river, the natural inclination is to go there. Right? So, in other words, going there from there is here.
This is the very reason why those four states are also sometimes categorized this side, on the material side, rather than a very few times.
It means which ones?
The Salokya side.
Oh, it means all the liberation. Yeah, it means just looked at it from that side because you can't have that view.
Yeah.
But I think they were basically talking the glories of bhakti, how these devotees that are situated on unalloyed devotion, they're not interested in these. You know, the Lord gives them that they can serve Krishna, but the point is they're not interested in them. That's not their reason. So, because you're having the whole range, because even so in the spiritual world, that's perfect. Right? But then Mathura is more perfect and Vrindavan is most perfect. So then it's just a matter of if you're discussing most perfect, then that means you're showing its specialty. You're not saying that the others are bad. You're just saying that it's not this. You know, if I say this is a mango and this is a lychee, I'm not saying that, you know, that the lychee is bad or the mango is bad. I'm just pointing out the situation. Right? The circumstances. Yeah.
What we call this perfect, perfecter, perfectest.
Perfect, perfecter,
perfectest.
Saraswati.
Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati.
Oh, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Yes. Yeah, that's then using it in one, I say, declining the word. Like that. Yes. The devotees do not accept the first variety, right? In other words, the liberation without service to the Lord. This is understood in the previous verse quoted. We did that. If the four types of liberation are not accompanied by service, they are rejected. Because ekatva, or oneness with the Lord, is always without service. The devotees always reject it. Oneness is understood to mean merging into the Lord, or Brahman, Sayuja. Right? And this, when it's talking about the five kites of liberation, when it says oneness, this is what it means. 1257. But the devotees solely attached to the Lord, who relish the sweetness of prema, never accept the five types of liberation at all, even prema uttara. Srila Prabhupada. So those who are on the four liberated states may still be going through different stages of existence. In the beginning, they may want the opulences of Krishna, but at the mature state, the dormant love for Krishna exhibited in Vrindavan becomes prominent in their hearts. As such, the pure devotees never accept the liberation of Sayuja to become one with the Supreme, though sometimes they may accept as favorable the other four liberated states. Put it in both places. Those who are pure devotees do not even accept prema uttara mukti, mentioned in the previous verse. By the use of the word uttara, predominance, a little desire for sukha and aishwarya is indicated in that prema seva. However, the devotees do not desire that portion, and therefore they reject prema seva uttara mukti. The first stage of service takes the form of sadhana. By that, one attains the second stage of service. This is called Siddharupa, or perfected stage of service. For the pure devotees, these four types of liberation are achieved as secondary items by service. Pratitam matsevaya, as stated in verses such as the following. Matsevaya pratitam te salokyadi chatushtayam nechanti sevaya purna kutonya kala Viplutam, Srimad Bhagavatam 9.4.67, quoted in verse 38. The devotees do not desire the happiness and powers attained through those four types of liberation at all. Mm-hmm. That is the meaning in verse 38. So mentioned here both happiness and powers. So that's the meaning before of the even prema uttara, because they're talking about the facilities that go with that position and the happiness that goes with. So they're not interested in those. Like that. Right, because generally devotees won't be interested in the powers. You know? They'll be interested in the happiness. But even that, because it's about our happiness rather than Krishna's. They are satisfied completely having attained the highest bliss by serving the Lord directly. Purna sevaya. Actually, service depends on being on the same planet, etc. So, those items are accepted as part of pure prema. If they do not desire those type of liberation, how much more they dislike the temporary rewards of the material world? Kala viplutam. How could they desire such things? So, if they don't want liberation, why would they want anything in the material world which is temporary? 1258. Among the devotees who are dedicated solely to serving the Lord in prema, the devotees whose hearts have been stolen by Govinda are the best. Even the kindness of the Narayana or other forms of Krishna cannot steal their hearts. If they've been attracted by Govinda, then they don't even find the other forms of Krishna to steal the heart. It means they talk about Krishna, it reminds them of Krishna. Right? Because he's the one who has their attention. Srila Prabhupada. Out of many kinds of devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the one who is attracted to the original form of the Lord, Krishna in Vrindavan, is considered to be the foremost, first-class devotee. Such a devotee is never attracted by the opulences of Vaikuntha or even of Dwarka, the royal city where Krishna ruled. The conclusion of Sri Rupa Goswami is that the devotees who are attracted by the pastimes of the Lord in Gokula or Vrindavan are the topmost devotees. Right? That's why I'm saying even out of so many who are liberated and self-realized these paramahamsas, then it's rare to find this kind of devotee. Jiva Goswami's commentary. Govinda here refers to Krishna, the Lord of Gokula. The word Shrisha, meaning the Lord, Isha, of the spiritual sky, Shri, Narayana also includes Krishna in his form as the Lord of Dwarka. 1.2.59. Though the forms of Vishnu and Krishna are non-different according to the statements of scripture, Krishna's form is shown to be superior because of his rasas. That means it's the same person, but the rasa Krishna expresses in Braja, which are endowed with the highest type of prema. The very nature of his rasa show Krishna's form to be superior. And so in that, then that form also takes on those mood of those rasas. Because in Vaikuntha, then there's a great formality that's there, right? But we see in Braj, it's not about the formality. So how he dresses, how he acts, how he does. Right? Yeah. You know, it's just like, let's say, we have a picture of Paramatma. You know, or any of the, like, any of the ones in Bhagavatam where Krishna has four arms or more, like that. Right? Generally, how is he standing? Right? Very straight, formal, right? Mm-hmm. 2 feet on the ground, you know, the arms there in a symmetrical way, you know, looking very beautiful, very opulent, you know, all the, like this. And so that matches that mood of that. But we see Krishna, then he's in the threefold bending form, right? Carrying his flute, not weapons. Right? And so then, like that, it's just, he manifests the greatest sweetness there, because that's his natural form. The others are his expansions to express these other aspects of himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Now, I should see the greatness, great blessing, great mercy to be able to be in contact with Krishna.
Yes, yes. That's the whole point. Lord Chaitanya is that somehow or another the highest is being offered to the lowest.
Yes.
Right? You know, so, you know, we hear that and yeah, like this, but it's literally the fact that that in the worst age, with the worst people, then they're getting the opportunity to actually deal, you know, be exposed to and inspired in Braja Bhakti. That's very, it's very rare. You know, like that. So that's the point. The acharyas are showing us that and that. You know, so here now, going through all those verses one after another, then you start to, there's a pattern here, right? You know? Yeah. The very nature of his rasa shows Krishna's form to be superior. Srila Prabhupada, a devotee who is attached to a particular form of the Lord does not wish to redirect his devotion to other forms. For example, Hanuman, the devotee of Lord Ramachandra, knew that there is no difference between Lord Ramachandra and Lord Narayana. And yet he still wanted to render service only unto Lord Ramachandra. That is due to the special attraction of a particular devotee. There are many, many forms of the Lord, but Krishna is still the original form. Though all of the devotees of all of the different forms of the Lord are in the same category, still it is said that those who are devotees of Lord Krishna are the topmost in the list of all devotees. Right? Because they're all the same, because they're all in the same transcendental position. But those who are devotees of Krishna, that's on the topmost position. Jiva Goswami's commentary. The meaning of rasena in this verse is, quote, by sweetness compounded, composed of the highest levels of prema, end quote. The verb utkrishyate has a causative sense included in it, and thus it means is made eminent or is shown as supreme. This takes place because that is the nature of his rasas. Esha rasa stitihi. Thus the meaning should be, quote, the very nature of Krishna's rasas shows his form as the superior. No, form as superior. The queens, other than the principal eight queens, who are satisfied with their relationship with Krishna, describe the supreme attractiveness of Krishna's form during the pilgrimage to Kurukshetra. doesn't do so well in all the hairs. Doesn't do very well in the blanket either. Okay. O saintly woman, we do not desire dominion over the earth, the sovereignty of the King of Heaven. Unlimited facility for enjoyment, mystic power, the position of Lord Brahma, immortality, or even attainment of the kingdom of God. We simply desire to carry on our heads the glorious dust of Lord Krishna's feet, enriched by the fragrance of kumkuma from his consort's bosom. We desire the same contact with the Supreme Lord's feet that the young women of Braja, the aborigine Pulinda women near the grass, and the cowherd boys tending the cows desire the touch of the dust. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:83, 41-43. In the verse quoted, Samrajam means position as king of the earth. Swarajam means the position of Indra. We do not want those positions, nor do we want even the enjoyments offered by these positions. Bojam, right? Means that we don't want the positions. Okay, but you know, at least you can have the enjoyment of the position. Let someone else do the work, and you'll enjoy. But they don't even want that, right? We do not want to rule over others by acquisition of siddhis, vairajyam. We do not want the post of Brahma, parameshtyam. So they said it in all, like, poetic. In the Taittiriya Upanishad 2.8.2, there is a description of bliss, starting with the bliss of humans. Oh, Taittiriya, yes, Anandavali. Te ye satam manusha ananda. Multiplying that by hundreds of times, one finally arrives at the amount of bliss of Lord Brahma, and finally the bliss of Brahman. The infinity of that bliss, anantyam, is shown by the words, yato vacho nivartante, from which words turn away, words cannot describe it. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.9.1. Even that infinity of bliss available in Brahman we do not desire. Moreover, we do not desire the abode of the Lord of Lakshmi with Samipya and other benedictions, Hare Padam. We do not want dependence on these things. So that's what the queens are saying. Right? They're just interested in just serving the Lord. Right? So that's the whole point that's being brought up. Quote, then what better thing do you desire to attain? End quote. Means if they don't want that. Okay. Well, let's see. No, because then it continues with that one. So it ends with. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Nitya Gaura Premanandi ki.